It's a big day. It's a big day.
Very big day. Yeah. How are you doing?
I'm okay. I'm all right. It's Cinco de Mayo.
It is Cinco de Mayo. Do they do that over there?
Yeah, well, you know, in their own way. Shots of tequila, I guess, around a bar. But yeah, I made taco pockets. Yeah, so we had taco pockets, and then Gemma bolted off. She is getting her hair cut, colored, all that kind of stuff, and she's actually still there.
She doesn't have you coloring her hair anymore?
No, now that lockdown is over, she can she can go get it done like a real human being. Not me, though. Look at me. I don't care.
It's kind of punky. It's cool.
It looks cool. Yeah, it's a just a pony. I just wasn't having it today.
Is that for horse? The ponytail for horse?
It could be. I just wasn't in the mood to do anything, so I just threw it up. So yeah, let's get her in here, shall we?
Yes, looking forward to it.
I wonder if people are sick of this yet. Get her all connected with the audio. Yeah,
just do this.
Get him in there, girl.
Oh my God, does my face look red?
I've walked
12 miles today.
I know, you said you. This woman went on a 12-mile hill walk today.
Wow.
Yeah. Look at you. Awesome. You look fabulous, darling.
Hello, it's lovely. We've not done this for years.
I had not seen you for years, but you look amazing. And I watch everything you're doing all the time. You've had a big year.
It's been an incredible year. And in spite of COVID and lockdown, it's just been, I've been quite productive, not musically, but just kind of making plans ahead. And my tour, it's moved again to April 2022. But what's happened in the meantime is I got a little bit of funding. So on Sunday, I'm going up north to start recording.
Oh, nice.
Fantastic. Well done.
That's the first time I've recorded. I'm heading towards my next album, which I think is my 10th. I don't know. But anyway, so I'm frantically writing away here. But the whole point is me to experiment.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
It's all about, because the last album, Home, was a bit like a bookend with the first album, Same Sky, which the anniversary is about. So I feel free now to go off and explore and try things, you know, try things out. As I said, it's from Creative Scotland, which I'm eternally grateful for. It's just a small amount to get me going. But it's a chance for me to try things out, because most musicians without a major label, it's hand to mouth all the time financially, and you don't have the luxury of sitting in a studio trying things out. So, and I know that we've got like technology and you can sit at home and record, but it's not the same as being in a studio and having that environment. And this studio is an old church. It's called St. Mary's Space.
Oh,
it's a beautiful, beautiful place.
Oh, that's going to be.
That's some nice acoustics from there.
It's incredible, absolutely incredible. So, and the engineer Jamie is a bit of an expert on acoustics, and he's actually an expert. I don't know what the phrase is, but he records and teaches people how to record ambient sounds, etc. Which I do on my iPhone. I record. Like for the last album, I recorded various things, like the tide when I was a child, when I grew up, the place that we went to when we were children, and I recorded a high tide, a low tide. I recorded where my mum and dad's ashes are. Now, you don't physically hear those things, but they're actually in the track.
Oh, wow.
But do you know how I discovered this feeling thing. Years ago, during The Same Sky, there's a track called Speed of the Beat, which is one of the singles. And when you isolate, so when I say isolate, for those that don't know, when you sort of choose a particular track, an element, and you solo it, one of the things is we had Tony, we said, let's do a little shaker. And the best shaker we found was homeopathic teething granules, who's a tiny wee thing like this. So there's this big mic and him kind of going, shaking this shaker. So, but what you hear is him, is him breathing and the wee shaker going. But also the window, the big studio window door was open and you can hear birds. Now, the thing is, you listen to the whole track, you don't hear any of that, but it's in there. It's got a lovely feel to it. So, yeah, I've been interested in that ever since, and I like to sort of put wee snippets in, little elements that people won't hear audibly, but it's in the track. So.
That's amazing.
That's awesome.
Do you worry about when you're doing a live show trying to, you know, trying to harness that, or no, you just...
No, I think that kind of thing doesn't... I think when you actually perform live, your actual... you're breathing out from yourself and people are breathing in what you're breathing out, and I think that's just as effective. You know, there's little elements that are key sounds as opposed to those atmosphere things. Now, I don't think I've ever put, because we occasionally use like a track so that it sounds like the original, but I wouldn't put those things in. I think just performing live, like we all agree, performing live is the magic.
Exactly. You feed it. Jay,
I know
that.
I agree.
Energy. Yeah. Yeah.
First of all, it's very nice to meet you. Denise told me a lot about you and I looked you up online and I was so impressed with your work and your career.
Thank you.
An amazing band you have. Wow. I was like, oh my God, that's you. So many people in the band and so many good people in the band. So it's really great to speak with you and hear about
it.
I'm a musician as well, and I understand what you're saying about those outside elements when you're recording. My last CD I made, we wanted a front porch feel to the song, like just like a laid back, swampy kind of country front porch feel. And instead of using any kind of a percussion instrument, one of the musicians played a cardboard box that just happened to arrive with a new piece of equipment for the studio. And it was just sitting there and like no one would ever know that's a box, but it sounded like you're sitting on your front porch and you might be hitting like the side of a chair or something, you know? So I totally get that, doing that in recording, but you can't really emulate that on the stage when you play that live.
What's really interesting is that my favorite producers are producers that use like analog sounds, real sounds, so that kind of thing of finding something which is not digital, it's analog. I mean, a lot of kids growing up today don't appreciate that, I think, quite the same, or being in a studio or what you can achieve physically and you know, in the ether, properly in the ether. I'm trying to remember, there's a producer I really like called Pierre Marchand. Do you know Pierre Marchand? I think he's Canadian, French Canadian.
I don't know.
He's produced the McGarrigle Sisters. He's produced Rufus Wainwright.
Oh.
So there's obviously that connection. And his production, Sarah McLachlan as well, his production tends to be quite natural. But at the same time, what he does is he uses natural instruments and... but he uses them in such a way as makes a loop with them. Analog instruments, and so if you listen in the background, it's incredible, especially Sarah McLachlan stuff in particular. It's just a real natural producer, really, really great stuff. So I'd love to find somebody that was of that kind of element. I mean, I'm doing all this myself at the moment, but what I want to do is record the album proper at the end of the year.
That's fantastic.
And we'll probably be looking for a producer, so I've never had that luxury before, so I'm like, oh. Who could we ask? But you know, these things are on a budget, as JD would recognize. You know, it's I don't know. It might be okay without getting some producer in, but for me, it'd be fun to have a bit of the responsibility taken away a little bit.
Yes,
definitely. Free,
I feel that.
Of course. You you mentioned Same Sky. This is, correct me if I'm wrong, but 30 years, right?
Well, it was 30 years last year.
Okay.
So
31
so years. Well, we did one show, which I filmed and recorded, fortunately, at the Queen's Hall in Edinburgh, and it turned out very, very well. So it's what people are going to get in 2022, which will be the 32nd anniversary, but we're still calling it the 30th anniversary.
But that's huge.
Be the Same Sky show. So
yeah.
I don't know. The only way I can describe what's happening at the moment, I don't know. It's like I'm a real firm believer in fate, and I think that 30 years ago, when everything was going huge and bang, and we signed our deal, we released singles, then the album came out in 90, we toured with Tina Turner across Europe, and then the Gulf War happened, and there was all these things went wrong, began to go wrong. And it's like, the only way I can liken it is it's like there was this big wave coming towards us, and we missed it. I feel this wave now. This wave is coming now, and I can feel it, and I'm ready this time. I don't think I was ready then. And
it could be.
It's just so exciting. Very exciting.
Yeah, I mean, you're a cover girl. You were on the cover of Diva. And then...
I saw that.
And then behind you, I mean, that picture, the National Portrait Gallery.
Wow.
Well, do you know, there are so many honours attached to that moment in time. And I think I'll try and pick it apart a tiny bit. So having done what I've done for many years, having been out and with a major record deal and no one really getting it, and then Katie Lang happens and she gets all the shit, frankly, which maybe just saved me a little bit. But, you know, things, it wasn't the time at that point. So I've been through an enormous amount. A lot of things happened in my life growing up. And the struggle to be an out lesbian woman in the music industry, lots of stuff. Equal marriage happens eventually in Scotland. You know, it's all changing. So that's all happening as an undercurrent. I did a show with David McAlmont. You might not know him, but it was the Dusty and Shirley show. So David and I sang Dusty as in Shirley Bassey and Dusty Springfield songs. At a wonderful club in London called The Hideaway, which is like one of those old-fashioned, a very American model where you have dinner and you watch a show.
Oh, yeah.
So in London, in Streatham, it's an incredible... It's just moving, actually, recently. But anyway, we're doing that. And afterwards, this woman came up to me. So I often meet people after shows. And it was funny. She knows about this, so she would laugh, but... When she came up to me, I'm sure JD's the same. You get people coming up to you, and you just kind of got to take a wee. Is this somebody that's just what's behind this? And she said, "Would you like to come up and see my paintings?" And it's a bit like, "Do you want to come up and see my etchings?" But I was like, "Okay." She said she was an artist, and I was like, "Okay." So the next time I was in London, I went to her studio, which was in Streatham. It's in an old, beautiful, ancient old theatre in Streatham, and she has the top floor and she's got a studio up there, and it's quite literally called the Bavarian Buffet. And it's got like flock wallpaper, ornate lighting and stuff. And it literally was called the Bavarian Buffet. So people would go to a show, they would go to the Bavarian Buffet and get a drink before they went to the show. Anyway, that's where she is. She's got this incredible collection of mannequins as well, beautiful. I don't know if you know as well, because mannequins, they're modelled on actual models, and some of them are incredibly collectible. And she has some incredible models. She calls them her girls. Anyhow, so I had a lovely, lovely time. And she said then, can I do your portrait? And I was like, well, the honour's mine, really. So again, I went back down again. And instead of sitting for her, I sang.
Oh, wow.
Because I sang Careful. You perhaps know Careful. And I couldn't sort of explain to her what I did. And I thought standing still and going like this wasn't the same. So I sang, and she took some photographs of me. And I never saw anything for a long, long time. She said, "The portrait's finished. I hope you like it." But then lockdown happened.
Oh.
And I was like, she didn't want to just show me a photograph. And But under, right, so hold that thought. She's done the portrait. But parallel to me seeing her saying do the portrait, the Imogen Gibbon, who's one of the curators, directors of the galleries in Scotland, liked Roxana Hall's work. So she went and saw an exhibition in Manchester. And then she said, I'd like to come and see your studio and come in and see your stuff. So she was about to start my painting. And an Imogen came in and was looking around going, oh my God, I'd love to have some of your work in our galleries, one of our galleries. And it's just that you would need a Scottish subject. And she went, well, I'm just about to start painting Ross MacDonald. And Imogen was like, wow, she's just the kind of person we want in our gallery to change what kind of content they have in galleries. Because right. I represent so many different things. I'm an older woman, I'm a lesbian, I'm Scottish, so, you know, I'm a singer. I'm just, there's not anyone like me in that gallery at all or anywhere. So she said to her about that. She then went and saw it. I didn't know this. And she said, I want to acquire it for the nation, but it has to go through a real vetting process between all the directors of all the galleries so that it's rightly kind of looked at and considered, and is it the right thing for us to acquire for the nation? So it's a government funded thing. So I didn't know. And then she said, I've got something to tell you. You're sitting down. I was like, yeah. She said, well, we're at the last stage of the selection. And I was like, oh, really? And when she said, I was like, oh, but I don't know about you, but if something's happening at a distance, it's not tangible. I know.
Yeah.
So I thought, I need to rush down there and see this portrait before it gets taken back up to Scotland. And so I went down in the train during lockdown with a mask on, sat 5 hours in the train, saw the thing. I was so nervous because I thought, I really want to like this. I hope I don't dislike it.
You know?
I looked at it and I didn't recognise myself. I just didn't. Because I'm seeing myself from inside out. I'm looking at myself. And I'm like, oh, and this character is so bright and vivid in it. And you know, I'm like, I'm a boring old fart and I'm dark and I'm not very interesting. But this is what I was thinking. And what she said to me was that when she paints, she tries to capture the essence of someone. What she's captured is me singing.
Yes.
And when I sing with my heart and my soul, and that's what she's captured. So I'm getting kind of used to it now. But anyway, we weren't allowed to, when the portrait was hung in the gallery, we weren't allowed to look at it. Now, to show how big an honour this is. So this is the National Portrait Gallery in Edinburgh. Massive, beautiful old building. You walk in through these hallowed doors, and there is my portrait on the right. It's huge. It's three or four times life size. It's the only portrait in the Great Gallery. It's called the Great Hall.
Wow.
And that's the only portrait that's in there. And what's on it, and just like there's a frieze goes all the way around, and it's all the great and good of Scotland.
Oh, my God.
99% of the people on there are men, and some of the women are actually just like I'm clutching at straws. Fate, yeah. Florence Nightingale. There's hardly, you know, it's kind of symbolic images of women as well. So it's I'm in this gallery. So also, you know, being gay as well, it's like that's a big thing. And so to be in this gallery.
Amazing.
Feels like if I was a child growing up and I went into that gallery and I saw someone like me, I'd go, wow, I'd like to be like that. Who is this person?
Yes. And when I'm
dead,
exactly.
When I'm dead and gone, it's like that portrait's still going to exist. And it's going to show people that no matter what your struggles, you can still thrive,
exactly.
You know, and share a bit of yourself.
It's an incredible thing.
One other thing that's really, really worth looking at as well, people kept saying, how do you feel about it? And I'm going, oh, it's amazing. Blah, blah. I didn't feel it in here. So we walked in, Roxana and I, we knocked on the door to get in. We were the first visitors in a whole year. Knocked on the door to get in. We go in, we both get masks on, Roxana burst into tears. And I was like shaking, but I put my arm around her and we stood and we were looking at the portrait. And that was fine. We all had our photographs taken beside it, me and Roxana. This various different people had their photographs taken. And then people were just kind of, you know, that in corners, just chatting to each other. And I said to my brother, would you film me? And he was like, yeah. So I said to everyone, just to get them to go quiet, I said, I'm going to sing. I'm thinking of singing. Oh, that'd be lovely. So it just went all quiet. And I began to sing Careful.
Yeah.
And when you need to go and look at that because...
I did.
Honestly, it goes way up into the sky. I felt like I was flying. And that's how I feel about the portrait. And it was the only way I could describe it. And that has had over 85,000 views in the space of a week. Between the
As soon as I saw it, Jay, right? I tagged you in that as soon as I saw it. And I was like, you have to see this. Yep. And I knew that she would appreciate it. Yeah.
That's amazing. Congratulations.
It's such an honor.
That's the thing. Well, that's it. But you see, but just that moment in time, it was not planned. And I think that's the thing. It feels to me like if you try too hard, it doesn't happen. It's like something happens when it's meant to happen, and that wave's coming for me now, and I'm getting ready.
You know,
and I'm excited.
I could not agree more, because I feel like the things that have happened, you know, are a slow buildup, but they're still huge in their own right. You know, a portrait in the National Museum, you know, cover of Diva, funding coming through. They're all signs, you know, it is.
It's absolutely.
Yeah. And man, if there's anybody that deserves it, I swear.
I've seen you live, and I think
that anybody in their right mind, you know, I mean, don't get me wrong, I love listening to music, whether it's a digital track or a vinyl and all that, but I have seen you live many times. I used to love coming down to Brighton right around your birthday and singing at the Thistle or whatever it's called now, it's something different.
Yeah,
it's always a fun night. But seeing you live is something that you can, it's like an American expression, like seeing you live, you can take it to the bank. You know, like, you know, it's going to be a good show. You know that I never feel cheated. Like sometimes I'll see somebody and I feel like they're just phoning it in, but I feel like you give 110%.
You're totally right. And I think my biggest problem is trying to encapsulate that in a record, because I don't think we've done it yet. And that's why I want people to come and see me live, but I'd love to try and capture a little bit of what I can do live. So whether that means I have to sing, like almost live to capture that, I don't know yet, but
for a live recording, like a live show of an album.
I'm going to re-record Careful, because the biggest issue I have is the same sky is owned by Sony, as like they own everything. Both my first albums are owned by Sony, so I figure that the only way I can get to do something with Careful is to do it myself. So I'm going to re-record it myself in the next sort of few months. And I just wish it had been recorded before I put that thing out, because sales today are just crazy. With that amount of views and potential sales, I would have been in the top 10, certainly in this country.
Oh, definitely.
So there's everything to play for, because I don't want to be in the charts particularly. I just want the tipping point, you know, to raise your profile. It's almost like Monopoly, you know. You pass go, you collect your, is it £200 still? Is it going up? I don't know. You know, and you move around the board, because at the moment I've spent the last God knows how many years not on the playing field, you know.
Yeah.
So I'd like to be on the playing field, because I watch people, and I'm not saying, I'm fantastic, but I watch people, and that thing that you've just said, Denise, is that I notice people not giving. They're just kind of floating. They're not giving.
Yeah. Right.
Like, you have to give to receive. To be a great artist, you have to give a bit of yourself.
Yeah.
And not be like hundreds of other people. But it's a lesson that only the ones that actually make it find out, because for every one person that makes it, there's hundreds of thousands.
It's a tough business.
Just trying to be someone
That's
else.
True.
It's a tough business. But I mean, I think, Jay, you've been doing this a long time too, and you know, it's a,
yeah.
it's it's got to be the perfect storm of, you know, the band, the right songs, the right band. I mean, it really does have to be the perfect storm. Like, it's, what do you call it? Lightning in a bottle.
Uh-huh. Right. Yeah. It is. I was thinking about how you were saying that things just, when you're not looking for it and it comes to you, that's how I got to play one of the songs I wrote on one of my military tour. I did a homeland, a military tour base here in the United States, like 3 years in a row. And I got a phone, an email from a cheerleader from the Indianapolis Colts NFL football team. And she wanted to sing one of my songs that I wrote for the troops on their USO tour. So to thank me, they invited me to sing at Lucas Oil Stadium, which is the home stadium for the Indianapolis Colts, on their Veterans Day halftime show, to sing my song. And it was like, someone in my level doesn't usually get to even sing in a stadium, football stadium, let alone sing your own song that you wrote. So for me, if I had looked for that, like, oh, let me sing the NFL, let me sing a halftime show, that would have never happened. It came to me in an email because my song was up on a site, Songs for the Troops, and the girl found it on that. So I know what you mean when things are like, it's like serendipity, like it's meant to happen and you didn't seek that.
I was just going to say, I mean, one of the things that I often, the conclusion I come to is, like today, for example, up in the hills, the views were just incredible, but no camera would ever capture that moment. None of them that much. And so I've lived it. And I think the moment you're talking about is like, that's inside you, that wonderful excitement and pride, those kind of, you know, moments, those kind of bullet point moments through your life that are incredible.
Right.
And
it's true. And
they're for you, those moments. And it's like, instead of trying to take the best photograph, just look and enjoy it, breathe it in and enjoy it. Because it made me also think as well that years ago, I'm such a perfectionist. And you're right, I try to give my every last ounce. I mean, I do say to people, I'll probably, you know, I'll sing to my last breath, you know, because it means so much to me, never mind anyone else.
Yeah.
You know, but I've gone off piste. I often go off piste. what was I going to say? Oh, my God. It was to do with what Jay said as well. Okay. But just, to reiterate that anyway, just that those moments are, you know, they're magical moments. I've had so many of those in my life. I'm very, very, very blessed and lucky. You know
my mother just said to me the other day, aren't you glad that they didn't have, you know, phone cameras, like video phone stuff when you were younger? And I said, I get it. Like, of course I wouldn't want my drunken exploits put on the internet, but in the same respect, I would love to have certain moments, you know, not moments, but like days or, you know, stuff like a friend of mine posted a picture from, geez, probably like 1982 at a picnic that we had with all the employees from my mother's restaurant. And, you know, it's the stuff that it got away from me. And there I was looking at the picture and like that whole day came back to me. And it was like, it was so cool. Like it was like those, I think my biggest fear is forgetting those times, you know, and I was like, oh my God, it happened. Like I forgot this day and it was so fun. And I can't believe that thank God someone took a picture, you know, like I'm so happy that someone took a picture. So yeah, it's a blessing and a curse, I think.
Right.
When you talk about those moments, but they're with you, you know, and that's all you need is a little memory jog and they come back.
Well, I don't know if Jay agrees with me, but music saved my life and I've seen it save other people's lives as well. And also I've been very blessed to sing, you know, at the closing moments of a few people's lives. And it's careful I've sung. And It's an incredibly spiritual thing, even if you don't have any faith. It's a very incredible thing to do. I sang to my mum before she passed away.
Aww.
It was one of those moments, you know, I wanted to give her something.
Yeah.
And I couldn't think of what I could do that was enough to tell her how much I loved her. And I said to my brother, I'm going to sing. He said, how are you going to do that? How are you going to manage to do that? I said, I will. And I did. I sang to her. And she had cancer. She had ovarian cancer, but she couldn't speak. But I could see in her smile, she was smiling at me. You know? And I sang. And it was just one of the, you know, now we're very negative about American phrases, etc. But awesome. The word awesome in its truest sense, when I sang
Grateful to my mum,
it was awesome. Yeah. But not in a flippant way, a really powerful, powerful way. It was awesome. And just, we were all awestruck. We all just, I sang and everyone just stood and listened and, you know, my mum watched. But I was asked, I've been asked a couple of times to sing to a few other people and I think very carefully about it first. Because it's an incredible honour to be asked to be present, not necessarily physically, but kind of down the line or whatever. And I've sung to a couple of people, and first time I did it, I got very upset after it because it was for an older woman. It just reminded me of my mum.
Oh yeah,
you know. Yeah. But I thought I was meant to do it. I was meant to sing. I was meant to do this. I think, I don't know if Jay agrees with that, that music is a really powerful, powerful thing used in its correct way, not in a commercial way, you know. It's a special thing.
I totally agree with you, and something similar happened to me. My very good friend was up in Pennsylvania. I'm in South Florida with her mom, who was sick with pancreatic cancer. But it was her birthday, and it didn't seem like it was time for her to go yet. She was just not too well, and my friend was up there most of the year taking care of her mom. And I was leaving the house to go to a gig. And I said to her, I called to wish her mom a happy birthday. I knew her mom very well for years. And she said, this is Kelly, Denise. Denise knows Kelly.
Okay.
And I said, okay. She said, my mom's on the phone. And I said, I'll call her tomorrow and wish her a happy birthday. And she goes, no, wait, she got off the phone. I put my guitar down. I opened up the case. I sat down and played her happy birthday. Mm-hmm. And the next day she passed away unexpectedly. Mm-hmm. And my friend told me after that moment, before the next day, like when I put the guitar away, I said hello to her, happy birthday. I went to my gig. She said, you made my mom smile. It was mm-hmm. the first time she smiled in weeks. Mm-hmm. She's been feeling so mm-hmm. sick. And I'm thinking, I forget, like, I think we forget as artists and musicians, how much our music can make a difference to people sometimes, because we're so used to doing that, you know, like me just singing happy birthday to her made her happy. And I was so glad I took that moment to stop and say, let me just do it now then, not wait till tomorrow, because who would have thought the next day she'd be gone? So I get what you're saying.
Yeah, but the thing that's wonderful about it is you get something from it too. And I think this is what some artists don't understand, that by giving, you deceive. Yes. It's the most magical thing. And that's not just music, it's life in general, isn't it? It's like, if you give, you deceive. And the more open you are, the more you receive. It's just an incredible thing that I've discovered in the last kind of handful of years, you know?
I always tell you guys, like Jay, I remember saying this to you before, like, it's a gift. Like, what you guys are doing, it's a gift that you're giving to people, you know, and I feel like I'm incredibly proud. Like, I always say that, like, away from a show, like, I can't imagine how you guys feel, you know, but I know I walk away going, wow. I'm so proud of them, like, that they can share that.
That's so nice.
It's a big deal to be on the receiving end. You know what I mean?
That's nice. I tend to forget that. I don't know about you, of course, but I tend to forget that, because sometimes there's a lot that goes into getting up on the stage, like so much stress. I don't know if you get that.
Ahead
of time, the preparation and the problems with the sound or whatever, and you get up there and you don't realize that you're giving joy to other people.
I think so. Here I've got a confession to make. I'm 63 in November, 63 years old. I want to keep doing this for at least another 10 years. My voice is still young, so I think I can still do it. And that's why I'm trying to get fit just now, because I want to be fit. The tour, I mean, it might not seem a lot to anyone else, but I mean, I organise it all myself, and it's 20 shows in the UK. So it's a huge physical ask, because the show's 2 hours long. So I'm not just a Tish Toshy singer. It's huge, big, not operatic singing, but it's big breathing, big songs. It's 2 hours of that. So I need to be fit, I think, to be traveling around and doing that. So yeah. That's what I'm trying to do. So definitely. That's the other thing you forget about. You just kind of throw yourself onto a stage and expect yourself to be able to do it. Well,
I did it. I just did that on Saturday night. I had a local sold out show in a small venue, and I don't play that often right now because of COVID and of course, a lot of places aren't open. And so I forgot how much energy you need to really sing well. And I made the mistake of putting a ballad right after a very high pace. And I'm like, why did I do that? I'm never doing that again. Like, in my mind, I'm thinking, well, they're going to be really, we got something
what
really
would work well. Yeah.
Now we're going to bring them down to a ballad. But I forgot I had to get myself, because I was moving. And I'm like, I didn't realize how out of shape I was. You do have to be physically fit.
But it's not even just like physically as in body, but your cords, the musculature in here. So you do have muscle memory. The vocal folds are all kind of, you know, embraced by tendons and stuff like that. But I'm finding, I'm actually, as part of my funding, I've asked to get coaching, which I've not had in years and years and years, because I feel like my voice is going to take a right old battering, you know, next year. So I want to build up my vocal strength. So it's like that musculature, it's like suddenly expecting yourself to go for a marathon and you've not stretched or done exercises.
I just compared that exactly to that, because I sang for a whole day before I did the show, because I hadn't done that. I had it's like any other muscle.
You tired yourself out.
I am so glad that I am a listener.
Well, the thing is we do, I mean, you know, we get to a certain point, and I have to say I'm very, very lucky that I don't have to, because I've been singing for a long time and my voice has not been trashed particularly, because I haven't toured extensively, but I would like to. So it's like I've been doing a wee dry run for the last 30 years, and I'm ready for the big time. Finally, ready for the big time.
It's all been building up to now.
You said your tour is going to be 2020.
Spring next year.
Okay. Yep. And it's just the UK?
It's the UK at the moment, yeah. But without, you know, what I'm going to try and do is I'm going to put Careful out as a single.
Yeah.
And if that's the response I get from the song, you know, just flung up on social media, my hope would be that that's a tipping point. And you know, we sell out the tour and this is what I was saying to you at the beginning, without any plan, I've been to hell in a whole year where shows were cancelled. And as someone who's like Jay's probably self-employed as well, you know, no big major support system behind you, you know, as a self-employed person, you're aiming towards this thing here, and it vanished. And I was like, right, okay, well, I'll move it to over there. And then, nope, you can't do that. And it's and I kept moving things, and I thought, I felt like I was at sea. I was like, I don't know whether I felt lost. I didn't know what it really played havoc. And music, all lots of musicians are the same. But what has happened is that by moving that tour for the same sky, it's given me a space to create the next album. So we will good say goodbye to Same Sky in spring, but the new album will be recorded and ready for summer.
What timing? Yeah,
that I know, it wasn't planned.
It all fell into place in a weird way. It all fell into place. And I mean, sometimes that's just the silver lining behind the dark clouds, you know, like.
Yeah. Right, right. Well,
do you believe in, like, because someone said to me years and years ago, I've got an album called Hindsight, It's a Wonderful Thing. And in the photograph of the front, I went to Harris, which is a beautiful place up way, the islands way, way, way beyond the north of Scotland. And Harris is an area on Stornoway. And we went to this beautiful beach, and the photographer doesn't leave the island. That's why I went there, and she's a great photographer. So I went in there. I actually walked into the sea with half my clothes on, and it's not quite like Madonna, Cherish, but because it was filmed in February, and I was freezing. And I was like lying in the water, and every time she goes, she was like ready. And every time she was about to take a shot, I would go like that. I'd go, and I'd see the wave coming, and I'd go. The last shot, that photograph is the last shot in the shoot. She's in the water with me, and she said, hey, "This is the last shot, horse." And she distracted me, and the wave came over me, and I was like, "Oh," I was like that. And that was the shot. But anyway, but the reason I brought it up is a guy I know saw that image and he went, oh, he said, female power is coming back.
Yeah.
There's been too much male energy in the planet for too many years. And it's, now this was years ago he said this, because hindsight was out in 2003 or something like that.
Yeah.
And he saw this image and he says, I can see female energy. And I can actually see these kind of female figures or whatever coming out of the water. And I was like, really? And now here at this time, you look at how many female leaders there are in the world happening.
Yeah.
The women are taking back.
Man, I'll tell you what, you're right. Oh.
There we go. Hello. Hi. Hello, you.
Hi.
Hi.
Nice to see you.
You too as well. Yeah, that's fab. Nice to see you.
Yeah, thanks.
Right, we were saying it's like about 10 years, right?
No.
No, it's really not 10.
Seven.
I actually have no idea.
Seven. I'm counting when we were down in Brighton and we got to see a couple of shows. So yeah,
okay.
About seven.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. You've not changed a bit. You've not aged. You've not changed. I don't know what you do. I don't know what your secret is, but I want to know what it is.
Oh, I tell you what my secret is. My secret is I've used Astral face cream since I was a teenager. Have you heard of Astral face cream?
No.
It's a really heavy duty white cream. It's not Nivea. It's not perfumed. I've been wearing that since I was a child, since I was a teenager. But I know a couple of other people who are the same and they've got really nice skin. And I'm like, I should get sponsorship by Astral, really.
Good, really.
Is that like a cold cream that you put on and just leave it overnight and you have to wipe it off in the morning?
No, I never wipe it off. My skin goes and soaks it all up.
Right,
so
okay.
It's obviously addicted to it or something. I don't know.
Oh, well, that's good to know. We'll have to look for that.
I was going
to
say, you'll be Googling that tonight.
Yeah. Astral, you'll get Boots the Chemist. So it's a really nice thing. Get a wee tub to try it out. It's not expensive. It's not like your... what was it? Sorry, we're going off on a ridiculous conversation now, but oil of Ole. I remember it used to be Ule. My mum used to buy oil of Ule. But it's Ole now. Ole. I was like, has it been bought by Spanish people? I don't know. But I've always been on Astral. That's my thing. Well, I'd like to know how you get on with that, actually.
Yeah, I will let you know.
I think so. Absolutely.
We'll catch up before you go on tour. She's going to go on tour again in 2022.
We're in Brighton. We're in Comedia in Brighton. We're in Comedia in Brighton. That's where we're playing in Brighton.
Oh, that's excellent. Awesome venue.
Yeah, I think it's ridiculous. It's like a Tuesday or something. Because one of the things you can't do when you're touring is have a consecutive Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Thursday, because you've got 3 or 4 days, you know.
Yeah.
Anyhow, I think Brighton is unfortunately a Monday or a Tuesday, but, you know, we're worth it. We're worth it. Completely worth it.
I believe that. Yes, you are. Yeah.
I have to come there for that. I'll make a special trip. That's going to be part of my UK experience.
There you go, Jay. Perfect.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's spring next year. I mean, we're playing London. We're playing in a place called St. Pancras Old Church, which is a really lovely, lovely place for music.
Anyway, I want tickets to the church performance because your tone in a church is amazing.
Oh, it's going to be awesome.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, I just there's just so many exciting things, and so what I'm doing this time is I've got a guy I've actually asked to take care of the agency duties. I mean, I've booked all the shows bar two, But I've said, now I want to go and concentrate my music. Well, you just nursemaid them. So a guy called Tim from, he works for Happy Valley Pride, actually, and I met him through doing a session. I really got on well with him. So I think that's the thing. It means I'm just going to get more and more people as I can to start looking after me. Like I was saying to Jay, it's like, you would laugh, right? But that show, the Queen's Hall show, is a massive show. We had a lot of rehearsals. I'd strings in there, extra voices. And so we rehearsed for it. I filmed it. I recorded it. So the day of the show, my driver couldn't come. So I had to drive the splitter bus with the equipment and the band to the gig, reverse thing in. Then the person was supposed to sort the food out. The person wasn't there. So so I'm supposed to be sound checking, but I'm organising food. I'm doing that, and then get the sound check. And I'm like up to my quick change down the stairs onto the stage. Show 2 minutes meeting friends and family, and then out to meet the audience 2 hours later.
Oh my God! That's a schedule like nobody needs that. Nobody needs that.
No, exactly. And so I did that.
They say,
and then
I
was just going to say at the end of that, I then drove the bus back and dropped everybody off. And then I live 4 flights up, and I was like, oh, I can't leave stuff in the van. I was like coming up the stairs like that, lifting everything up the stairs, and I was back up at 8 the next morning to take the splitter bus back. Oh, I couldn't get out of my bed. I couldn't get out of my bed for 2 days. I was so exhausted.
Oh my God.
After that, that's the last full band show that we've done. I swore to myself then, Jay, that like that tour, there's going to be a tour manager, there's going to be a driver, there's going to be all of that stuff.
Yeah.
And I'll because I just want to get to a gig, rest, and prepare to go on stage, not run about after everybody else.
Yeah.
I totally relate to that. You have to wear so many hats. Even this thing we just did Saturday, I had people at the last minute asking me about their seats, like my family. And I'm like, can you just take care of your seats? Because I'm trying to prepare to get ready for the show. And I don't know why they changed your seats. And it's just, you know, it's I always say.
The thing is, you've always done this, Jay. You've always done this. Yeah. That's what I've always done. So that's what they expect. So it's time to go, no.
Yeah.
That's a new word I'm learning. Yeah. No.
You had a really good point, though, when you said that you've got to, you have to take care of yourself to give what you're going to give on stage. You can't, you know.
If people knew,
right,
Jay?
If they knew.
What the planning to book the show, the rehearsals, the finance behind it, the organisation behind the whole thing, you know. Now, that was one show, and the others were all cancelled, and they've all, and it's me that's been sitting trying to get people through lockdown to reply to my emails to forward the show's reschedule. Now, that's happened in some cases 4 times now.
Oh,
wow.
And I wasn't able to concentrate my music because I kept thinking, I need to do this and I need to do that. I need to do admin, and I'm fed up of it now. I want to concentrate on my music, and I'm going to maybe come across as a diva to some people, but I just have to think about myself.
It's time.
I can so relate. I just said at this last show, I'm hiring someone to carry my amp and my guitar and everything in and bring it back out at the end of the show, because I get it. I totally get it. I do all of that same stuff for my band too. And and I like to say my phrase that I always tell everybody now is, heavy is the head that wears the crown. And they're like, what?
Well, I like that.
That's perfect. I like that. Yeah. But
I love it. Let me ask
you this. Are you different in the studio? Like, do you find it more relaxing, less stress?
It's different.
It's definitely different kind of.
I've kind of put together the last few albums, you know, stolen moments to get in and record, etc. And this, going up to this studio, is about trying different microphones out and just the luxury of singing and hearing my voice and think, do I like that mic? You know, I've not had the chance to do that in 30 years when you had major record deals where you're into
big studios. I'm so looking forward to this. I really am looking forward to
that. That's a great idea. Yeah. What an artistic idea. That's such an artist such an artist in you to think to do that, those pre-recordings of those moments.
Well, in those days, like when we recorded the first albums, you would be in the studio for 5-6 hours singing, and you would get, the thing is, it's a pain and a pleasure at the same time, because you get, like, I'm writing songs at the moment, so all I've got is these songs going around in my head. But the same kind of thing happens when you're singing. It's like you hear the slightest tuning mistake, problem, the slightest tone or sound or diction, and you get so close to it. Like Pete, the first album I worked with a guy called Pete Smith, and he was a Londoner, and you know, you'd be in the studio, and it was like me learning, because all we'd done before recording a major album or signing a deal and doing an album was like demos in little studios. So to be in a proper, decent studio was like a learning thing, and I didn't.
Oh, really, yeah.
You know, I can sing live, but I'd not really had the time in the studio. So we would have been there 5-6 hours. I'd be exhausted. And he'd go, "No, mate, no, that's it. You're not going to do any more. That's it." It's what, and I went, "No, one more. I've got one more." Pete, he went, "All right, then." And I would do it. And he'd go, "Yeah, that was it." And then other times he'd go, "No, it's the one before." And I'd go, "Yeah, you're right." But, you know, it's a really, really enjoyable, it's a strange combination of pressure but also excitement, and I think that's the thing, if you can capture that human essence, that human frailty when you're trying to sing a little bit. I'll give you a good example of that, the original recording of Careful. What was going on while I was singing that vocal, we'd tried me singing it with there was 12 strings for Careful. And we tried me singing live with the strings, and that just wasn't happening. So we recorded the strings, and then I went in to record the vocal.
Oh.
And when I was recording the vocal, I was in this massive big room with a little booth around me and drinks and stuff like that. And Pete Smith left. He'd go and do something. And he left me in charge, looked after by two, Sven and Carl, the two guys. And I could see them in the big window. And I'm like, be careful. And I said, this is what I was saying to Jay just now. You can hear the slightest change in something if something's changed. And I said, have you changed the sound? Have you changed the sound? Because it's like, it sounds different to me. I'm not hearing what I want to hear. And I was singing. I'd go, no, there's something not quite, something has changed here. Anyway, I was in the middle of saying this to them. Pete Smith walked in and went, "All right, mate." And I was like, "Well, the sound's kind of changed in here." And he was like, "Really?" And he saw him going up to the window and he's going. And then the next thing, another headset is put there and he stands beside me. You know, I'm going, "Oh," and he flung them down. And then I could see, now I couldn't hear anything because the sound was off. I saw him going, it's funny now, but it wasn't at the time. You can imagine me, I'm like trying to finish the last sort of bit of the song, which is a long note.
Yeah.
And see him going, strangling Sven. He's going, and I'm going, "All right, mate, run it down to you now." And I was like, and I was like, and now see when you listen to the track, it's like my voice is great, and there's this bit where my voice goes ga-dum, and that's my heart beating. It's like I'm like, and it goes slightly out, but it revolves, it resolves beautifully. It's like at the end, it's almost like, you know, Tor Lundin doing a spin.
Yeah,
at the end of it, in the middle of it, I start to lose it a little bit because of the stress. And then I go over it, but if you listen to it carefully, you can almost hear there's a bit in the middle where my voice, there's a dip in it slightly, and I think it's because my heart's going, because he comes and stands beside me when I'm trying to sing this.
Oh my God. I like having this back, this like behind the scenes knowledge now, when I go back and listen.
See if you can hear it or spot it.
I feel like it's an Easter egg now, you know, like a little gimme.
I have to ask you, Horse, because I see the passion that you have in all that you do in the music, and I have the same thing the passion for the music, but then running all the other aspects of having a band and a career. On your personal life, like I've always found with having a partner, it's always been, they never get the commitment that you have, that you have to spend so much time to go on the stage, that one show. And they start to feel like, I've had people tell me they're last on my list, like in my past. And it's never really that. It's just that they don't know that passion, I believe, it is to do that.
Well, sure. But you've probably met those people after you had the career. And after you've always been a singer. It's them that changed.
Right.
I've just literally separated quite recently from my wife, and that was the case. It was like this was always going to be what I did, and the partner before that, and the partner before that, and actually now I'm really just enjoying being on my own and enjoying singing and not feeling that I have to. Like you just said, like just kind of change for someone else.
You know, a lot of times people see, it didn't happen in every case, but people see the person on the stage and they're very enamored with that person. They don't know what it takes to get on that stage and the commitment and the drive and the time.
But I just don't think it's just you or me. I actually think that a lot of people, when they meet someone, there's that flurry at the beginning, and then they have to often have to give a piece of themselves up to be there with that person.
Right.
What you need is someone that you don't give anything up. You can still be who you are. They can still be who they are. So I think that's, you know, I'm not looking for anyone else, but that's what you would want, that someone would understand that like you said,
just
that,
be
that,
accepting that, of it.
This isn't just a job. This is not a job.
No, it's not.
This is not a job.
Janice Ian. Do you know who Janice Ian
is?
Yes,
of course I do. Yes.
Do you know her?
No, I don't.
Janice Ian, Denise. You don't know her. Janice Ian said she's had a very successful marriage to her wife for like 30 something years. But she did say that when you marry a musician or you're with a musician, you're really only going to be their mistress. Don't expect to be, you know, their music is always going to be.
I would say that's all right, though, is it not? I don't want people to think that you don't give anything. You give as much as anyone in those relationships.
Yeah.
It's just this person is more than just somebody that's doing a 9-to-5 job. This person has a spirit. There's a spirit takes over you. And now that sounds a bit kind of like, well, I'm better than you or whatever. It's not. It's
just, no.
That is my choice. That is what I've chosen to do. And I've had those experiences where I know from talking to people that the music is incredibly important. Yeah. And that I get kind of pissed off because I sometimes feel I'm not respected by my peers, mostly male peers up here, say in Scotland. I'm not respected by them. I'm not on their radar. A, because I'm a woman. B, because I'm a lesbian. And now I'm older. I was never part of any club or clique. And I think that's often a problem sometimes in music, because you need to be pigeonholed into folk, jazz, rock, pop, you know, whatever.
Right.
And at the end of the day, I just that has changed a bit. But where I come from, as I say, my peers, I don't think they recognise me. So I find that incredibly disrespectful, you know.
Frustrating. It's frustrating because, you know, on the level, you've earned their respect. They just haven't taken it, you know.
It's not just that. It's like the interesting thing is that I would say that if you did a wee Vox Pops thing, I would say that maybe 80% of my audience is straight.
Yeah. Yeah, you'd say that.
And everyone's welcome. But I think people would presume that because I am gay, then my fans would be gay. What I do is, you know, I'm a great ambassador for the LGBTQ+ community because I'll accept anyone. And God, my fans would kill somebody if they did something nasty to me or whatever, because they've got a real fire to seeing my things on stage, a real fire to support me, but because it means a lot to them. They've all experienced either a death, a marriage, a birth, sure, and the songs have been a backdrop to their lives, like a lot of artists. So it's disrespectful to them.
Right.
It's disrespectful, yes, to them. Yeah. If they disrespect me, they disrespect my fans. Yeah. And I get very, yeah, angry on their behalf.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, I guess I never looked at it, isn't it? But it's true. Yeah.
I mean, it's a culture now of music's been so devalued anyway. I just don't know how. I would say I was lucky, but I don't know that luck has anything to do with it. I've worked very, very hard. And, you know, I think there are people coming up after me. I don't know how they either survive or grow an audience. I've no idea. Somebody showed me TikTok tonight. I know about TikTok, of course, but I'm looking at absolute, excuse my phrase, shite. Looking, yeah, at just stuff in this,
yes,
that have got, someone's got 15 million followers. And I'm like, because you do that?
Yeah.
And I think one of the worst things that the internet has brought us is celebrity culture, the kind of local celebrity who isn't talented, who, right, doesn't have a talent or skill. And we celebrate, you know, you'll ask kids on these programs like The Voice or whatever, X Factor, whatever, mm-hmm, and they're going, oh, this is my last chance to have, yeah, success. And they're 16 years old.
Right.
Try my age group, mate.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's like, and like, and why do you want to do this? Well, my mum's been ill, and we get the sob story.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Or we get, you know, why do you want to, well, I want to be a celebrity. Yes, but what do you want to do to be a celebrity? I want to be a celebrity.
Yeah.
And you're like, what?
Right, right.
Oh, God, yeah, it annoys the hell out of me.
I can't stand people that have a gimmick or reality TV have made, like, common idiots a celebrity,
right,
you know, that don't,
exactly,
that don't deserve a following, you know, and that, yeah, yes, it's very frustrating for the people that work hard and that want to put out quality and like you, yeah, say, like the passion and that are doing it because it's in them. It's not, there's not a want, you know, it's not about the, no, fame and the glory. It's about, like, I'm giving you a part of me, you know.
But, so but don't you think that it's kind of diluted? Everything's, yeah, like diluting down. I think the worst thing about the internet is, like, you can imagine if someone's been bullied out with,
yeah,
you know, whole, you know, and they get bullied or whatever, and then they go home and this bullying comes into their home, mm-hmm, through social media and stuff like that. I can't imagine. I had a terrible time being bullied and stuff, you know, when I was a teenager where I grew up. I can't imagine what it would be like if I'd gone home and it came into my home with me.
Oh, isn't it ridiculous?
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, where's it going to go? Where's it going to go? I think that's the way to look at it. Where's it going to go from here?
Right. You know, yeah.
It's horrible. I mean, I know. So,
but you know, here's the thing. And coming full circle with that is that a lot of kids that are bullied or whatever, they find their solace in music. Mm-hmm. You know.
Yes.
So that's why I always say, like, what you guys do and what you have is a gift, and you know, you might lose sight of the fact that, you know, people are finding, you know, solace and comfort and, you know, in that music. So yeah, you know, as hard as it's been, and as long as it takes, you know, you have to keep going. You have to keep doing it.
I think
I'm telling you have to keep doing it.
Thanks, Denise.
You're welcome. From a listener.
I think because you've understood yourself how important music is.
Yeah.
That's, if you get it, if you understand that yourself, when you make music, you know, you understand it a little bit. That's a really special, I would describe it as an essence.
Yeah.
It's a real essence because the planet resonates, our planet, the core, Earth's core resonates. I think, is it E flat? Anyway, the Earth planet has a note that resonates. Flowers and plants all resonate. We as human beings, it's only natural, therefore, that we resonate to music and notes and how it makes us feel, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's simple, very true.
Simple thing.
Oh man, listen, we have kept you up way past your bedtime. And I feel terrible about it. And then I made you come back.
I told Denise when you asked me, I said, you know, I could chat for Scotland.
I do. I know, but I want you to get your rest because I want you to put out as careful, and then I want you to go on tour, and I want you to take care of yourself. And I cannot wait to see you perform live again.
Well, thank you. I tell you, you should hear some of the songs. I'm really excited about these new songs.
I'm super excited about this. This was all new. This was all news to me, and I just love it.
No one knows. I've just decided in the last little while. It looks lovely, and I just can't wait. I could have chosen a studio nearby, but I think I wanted to get away into the countryside and just be.
Oh, it'll be that'll be beautiful. That kind of.
I live in Glasgow, you know, so.
Yeah, that kind of piece will play right into it. So that's perfect. Well, my friend, it has been amazing, and
I've loved it.
Yeah,
it is so great meeting you. I'm so happy I got to meet you. I was looking forward to today so much. I'm going to interrupt you, Denise.
I've talked you up a lot, horse.
All right, okay. I hope I haven't fallen.
Denise told me so much about you when I looked you up, and I'm like, oh my God, wow, I'm so excited she's going to be on the show. She's a big deal.
I'm a big deal.
You are a big deal.
Do you know what? I think it's just very, people keep saying to me, oh my God, how come what a voice, and you know, oh, I love your music. Oh, how come you're not bigger? Somebody said, if you were in the States, you'd be massive. And I'm like, no, I would go on from being a tiny speck in an ocean to a tiny dot in a universe if I went to America.
Yeah.
But it just takes that magical tipping point, that moment that you can't quite discern or decide. But that moment when I sang Careful came from my heart. And I think if I can capture that magic and put it out as a record, I think people will get it.
I do.
Coming out of lockdown, I think Careful is the antidote, maybe.
Yeah.
So I just know this magic, something special, and it wasn't meant to be. It just happened, you know.
I must have watched that, you know, at least a handful of times, and just
85,000
over and over again. Yeah. So part of that was me, but
yeah, great. Glad to
but hear it's that. Worth it. It's worth a look. And that's on your Instagram, isn't it?
It's on Twitter. It's on Instagram. It's
okay,
on
good.
Facebook.
So I want anybody that listens to this to go, you know, find you on Instagram and really have a listen to that, because it was absolutely incredible.
Magic.
Oh my, this has been great. Yeah. Terrific.
I've had a lovely time myself. It's lovely to spend a bit
of
time.
Well, go get a good night's rest. You've earned it with your uphill walking.
12.2 miles. Oh, the best part, though, was 1,500 calories.
Oh, my.
Wow.
1,500. Holy crap.
Yeah. That was
an exercise bike, and I only burned like 500. It's like, wow.
Yeah, it was
that's amazing. Well, good for you. That's fantastic.
I've got this rosy glow.
It's the finally, you know, that the freshness of being outside without having to wear a mask, and you know.
Oh, honestly loved it. Fantastic. Yeah, anyway, wonderful. I'm just chatting. Stop me. You know what I'm like.
Well, I am looking forward to seeing you again in person this time on stage. I think the world of you, and thank you so much for doing this. All right. Well, good night, ladies.
Thank you.
Right.
Thank you all. Definitely. We're going to
Okay. Catch up. Okay. Night night.